Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Emily Lawler, Jacob Kanzler, and Craig Mauger. A little later, we've got Ruth Johnson, Secretary of State, kicking off her re-election campaign today. We were able to talk to her Friday before she started her statewide tour that is coming on today on Monday. And then also, we were able to get audio from Mark Schauer's launch or his filing of signatures for the gubernatorial campaign. He had some statements to supporters there and answered a couple questions, and we thought you might be interested in hearing what he had to say there. First of all, guys, the reason Mark Schauer was at the Secretary of State's office on Friday was to file signatures. This is the time right here. Filing signature deadline day is tomorrow. It's Tuesday. Craig, as you've been monitoring the filings, what's kind of stuck out to you?
There are a lot of unanswered questions going into Tuesday. There are a lot of holes on the ballot for both caucuses when it comes to the state legislature, and we're going to see who can get the signatures for these congressional races too. So a lot of questions that will be answered in the next couple of days.
I find it interesting here as we continue to move on in this term limited environment, how difficult it's got to be for these caucuses. Every 6 years, and in some cases 4 years and 2 years with the Senate, to try and keep finding quality people to run in these districts. It's got to be a challenge, Emily.
Oh, I disagree. There's talent around every corner. And obviously, you know, they're not necessarily recruiting from the typical candidate pools, people on school boards and county commissions. You know, we've seen a lot more business people take an interest in politics.
Well, I'm talking about these competitive seats now. You know, I think that in maybe a solid Republican district, like let's say the Ken Kurtz district or the Mike Shirky district, we've had an outpouring of interest in some of these races. I'm talking about people who are willing to go in some of these competitive races, let's say the McBroom seat, the Farrington seat, some of these seats, Craig. We haven't seen maybe the top tier candidate emerge. And it's just not the Democrat issue. I mean, this is a Republican issue.
No, I mean, I think anyone who is in that line of work will tell you that it is not easy to get someone to put their life on hold for a few months just for the chance of having a job for 2 years and then having to, you know, go for that job again in 2 years. And in these close districts where there's no guarantee that you're going to be reelected, I mean, it is just, there's no certainty there for these people. And if you're someone like an attorney and you make decent money, it's probably not that appealing to go work in the House. And then also you could run for a judge seat and have that seat forever and make a lot more money. So it's very challenging to recruit good candidates in some of these swing districts.
I thought it was interesting us talking at our Monday meeting about the Democrats getting a good candidate in that Cotter seat and how this is the first time they've been able to find somebody, the Democrats now, who hasn't been a college kid or an old retiree, but yet those are the people who have that type of freedom to be able to run for public office, folks who are in mid-career. And I know I'm not saying anything new here, but to get these people to run, if you're not owning your own business or have some flexibility at the job, it's got to be a little challenging, and we'll see tomorrow. You know, I still contest that somebody will forget to file tomorrow. I still think it's going to happen. This is 3 weeks earlier than usual. We usually file the middle of May. It's the last, the fourth Tuesday in April, so it's a little different.
You're not going to name names, are you?
No, because who knows, you know? But I just have a feeling something's going to happen, and somebody's name will not appear on there.
Somebody's still on vacation.
Or will the Republicans or the Democrats be able to fill out their tickets? You know, we've seen that in past years as well, where the Republicans maybe weren't able to find somebody to run in a Detroit seat, or the Democrats were unable to find somebody. Well, they weren't able to find somebody to run against Chuck Moss once. Hoffman once, there was a hole there. Hoffman was just basically reelected on filing deadline day. There was nobody but him on the ballot. So, I mean, we could see that as well.
I'd be interested in your perspective. I know 2 years ago, there was a huge thought in Lansing that the Democrats really lost the House last year on filing day. Is that something that you've seen a lot? I mean, how important is this day?
Yeah, well, it has to be important, because if you don't get the quality people to run against incumbents or at least make it interesting, you can just rule out particular seats right off the bat. You narrow that field of seats that you're actually competing in. And, you know, I think the positive, though, for Dems is that they don't have that much ground to make up. you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we know that the Monroe seat is going to be critical, and we know that the Terry Brown seat is going to be critical, and that's probably going to be a loss for D, so they start with a negative one. The field of possibilities is pretty low, so I think we're going to have some big questions answered on Tuesday. The other thing that's due on Tuesday for Republican candidates, if you're interested in running for Secretary of State, Attorney General, or Lieutenant Governor, tomorrow you have to turn in 4 signatures from congressional district party chairs in order to appear as a contender at the convention. What this means is here for Wes Nakagiri, he's got to find 4 people who are willing to write his name down and vouch for him and say, yeah, you can go ahead and run, or Todd Corser. And what we've seen, Craig, and we've taken a look at these names, doesn't look like it's going to be very easy.
The list of people that you see are not people who seem like they're likely to make a very public gesture by signing a petition or signing this document for Wes Nakagiri, and that would be a very provocative position to take against the current chairman.
And you did a story just a couple weeks ago where you looked at congressional committee chairs. I mean, it was a majority. It was almost all but like 4 or 5 of them had endorsed Bobby Shostak.
Yeah, there's a lot of support for Shostak from that group of people. So
you would think that these people would then be quote-unquote establishment and would be more likely to support Brian Kelly. And so then you got to take a look at here, are they able to get signatures from 20 state committee members? And that may be even more difficult if you think that if the chair is not going to support them, then will any of their members then go ahead and support these people? I find it interesting that the quote-unquote establishment Brian Kelly folks have attacked this in so many different ways, you know, making it more difficult for them to get on the ballot. And then once they get on, this race for the precinct delegate stuff with the Freedom Fund putting out that mailer, trying to use Dave Ajma as a reason to recruit precinct delegates. This is an uphill climb that the Tea Party folks are having to face to try and get a Brian Kelly challenge.
I mean, I think that this is the establishment Republicans game, and it's no surprise that they're better at it.
All right, well, let's move toward the gubernatorial race and listen to what Mark Schauer had to say on Friday.
Michigan is ready for change. My opponent, our current governor, has been enacting policies that are hurting our people, weakening our middle class, and building an economy that works for a few, not for everyone in this state. Maybe working well for his family, like his cousin George, his friends, or his corporate special interest friends, but we need an economy and a state that works for everyone. That's why I'm running for governor. And with your help, we're going to get elected governor on November 4th.
That's right.
Now, 4 years ago, Rick Snyder ran as a moderate, spent $6 million of his own money creating this brand as One Tough Nerd. Now, as soon as he took office, Rick Snyder got tough on exactly the wrong people, the people that we care about and we're going to fight for every day. The nerd governor got tough on our kids by cutting $1 billion from public education, which is my number one priority. And he's been systematically privatizing education in Michigan. This governor got tough on our families, and that's personal for me, and I know for you. He raised taxes on hardworking families that are fighting hard to make ends meet to raise their kids. And he got tough on seniors by imposing the job-killing Snyder retirement tax that's a broken promise and weakens our state and weakens our economy. And this was all to pay for a $1.8 billion corporate tax break, even when companies send their jobs overseas. That's not tough. That's wrong. And we need a change. We are ready for change in Michigan.
Yeah.
And that's not our best Michigan, and those aren't my values. My values are about strengthening families, investing in kids, putting education first, strengthen our communities, keeping our promises to all of our people, and creating an economy that works for everyone. That's what we're going to do when I'm governor. Now, it's not going to be easy. We know that. Rick Snyder's scared, and he should be. In fact, he's even got somebody following us around here today. That's how scared they are. They're even running an ad that his corporate buddies are paying for through the Republican Governors Association, attacking me for a bill that was proposed by John Engler and actually extended and signed into law by Rick Snyder in 2011. That's how scared and worried they are. You know, we're neck in the polls, neck and neck in the polls, and with your help, I have no doubt that we're going to win. Now, Snyder has powerful friends. You know, he's got Dick DeVos and the Koch brothers and even Chris Christie standing with him. Now, can I count on you to stand with me?
You can!
So we're not going to match him dollar for dollar. We're not going to beat him with TV ads. But make no mistake, we are going to beat him.
Yeah.
We're going to create our Michigan. We're going to lead with our values. The good news is there's more of us than them. Let's win. Thank you so much. Today is the day we start.
Thank you.
Exciting day for you.
Hey, it's a great day. You know, we're turning in 27,000 signatures collected by thousands of volunteers from people from each of our 83 counties. It's 1,000 more than Rick Snyder turned in, and this is just the first time that we're going to beat Rick Snyder, certainly not the last.
Mark, I want to ask you about the polls right now. About a year ago, it looked like you actually had a little bit of a lead on Rick Snyder. If you looked at PVT, Epic MRA, so forth. Now things are, you're down anywhere between 4 and 12 points. Why do you think the change?
Yeah, the only poll that matters is the one on November 4th. And we are neck and neck. Snyder's scared, and they should be. That's why the Republican Governors Association is running a smear campaign, even attacking me for a bill that Rick Snyder extended in 2011. The good news is Democrats are united. I don't have a primary. I have a great running mate in Lisa Brown. Folks are energized all over the state. And, you know, people are angry about cuts to education. They understand how important good schools are to our economy. They're angry about a broken promise of the Snyder job-killing retirement tax. They're angry about tax increases on working families and low-wage earners, all to pay for a big corporate tax giveaway that's not working. Those aren't Michigan values. People are going to support me and elect me as governor because they want fairness, they want opportunity, they want an economy that works for everyone, and that's what we're going to create.
Well, you got to be concerned it's going the other way, though.
No, that's not what I'm seeing. And, you know, ask the Republican Governors Association. That's why they've spent already $1.5 million, and they're spending more. Look, this is a Democratic state. Michigan is a blue state. And, you know, the reason Rick Snyder was elected in 2010 is only 44% of registered voters turned out. It's going to be very different in 2014.
Mark, the state of the state numbers came out today, and we saw since the spring of 2013, Governor Snyder's approval go up by 10%. The people who put that poll together said they think it's because the economy generally seems to be on an upward trend in Michigan. Does that have you worried at all?
I'm not sure what poll you're talking about. What I see, and probably more important, what I hear as I talk to voters all over the state is the Rick Snyder they got as governor is very different than the one that ran in 2010. You know, the tough nerd has been tough on our kids, on our families, on low-wage earners. He's signed into law, you know, many things that have actually worked against good jobs and good wages. You know, he opposes raising the minimum wage. He signed into law right to work for less that hurts families. He's attacked women. He's attacked the gay and lesbian community. That's not our Michigan, and that's why I'm very confident that people are ready for change.
Mark, you said yourself you're not likely to face a primary opponent. A couple days left to file. Republicans question why you would take public financing for the primary cycle at that point.
I mean, that's, you know, common practice that John Engler and many others before him they participated in public financing. You know, fact is, this is going to be a people's campaign. You know, not only do we have 27,000 people who signed petition to put me on the ballot, we've got thousands of contributors, many of whom are very small, that are part of a grassroots movement that want to change the direction of our state. You know, we're going to be outspent significantly, I'm assuming. Rick Snyder's a millionaire, put $6 million of his own money in his primary campaign last time. He's got millionaires and billionaires supporting him. But, you know, the good news is there are more of us than them. People are ready for change, and we're going to give it to them.
All right, joining me on the other end of the line now is the Secretary of State, Ruth Johnson, who's announcing her candidacy for re-election this week. Thanks for joining us on the program, Secretary.
It's great to be here, Kyle.
Well, this week you are going to start your campaign for re-election. You know, it's interesting, though, there was an opening in your home district for Congress. Your predecessor there, one of your predecessors for Secretary of State, decided to do a congressional race when she was done. Why did you decide not to take the leap?
I'm concentrating and I'm being the best Secretary of State that I can. We're getting lots done. I'm enjoying it. I think I can provide great services for people and also better consumer protection efforts. Great Secretary of State, and I work with a great bunch of people. It feels so rewarding to get so much done, and we have lots more to go.
Now, it had to be tempting, though. I mean, these congressional seats don't happen very often, and here you had one in your backyard. You had to have given it a second of thought.
You know, I really didn't. I was asked by a number of people if I would, which was very nice of them, but I really think I'm getting so much done as Secretary of State that I knew pretty quickly that there would just be no way that I would leave this job. It's just so much... It just has so much reward to it when you can actually be in charge of something, work with great people. We've been able to implement more time-saving technology, and we even have more coming and add to our consumer protection efforts. There's nothing more important in America than making sure that we have secure and fair elections. And as a chief election official for Michigan, that's been a great experience, and we've gotten a lot done. And also expanding partnerships so we can provide better services for people, and we can do it more efficiently, too.
Let's talk about your race here for 2014. Right now, you don't have a Democratic opponent. I'm sure that will change here. But is it harder to raise money without an actual opponent that you're running against, and no real threat at this point of a challenge?
You know, I can't say because I've not ever run for Secretary of State again, so I don't know. I don't know what the statistical information is. I do know that we are slightly above the past Secretary of State at this point in fundraising.
Oh, well, that's going to be encouraging.
People have been very generous. I think that the team in Lansing has done such a good job that people are enthusiastic about having more success and getting Michigan going even faster, better, and more jobs.
As far as Secretary of State goes, in this era of term limits, do you feel like the position of Secretary of State stands alone in the voter's mind, or do you feel like it's subject to, you know, wave elections, where if the Republicans do well, then you're going to do well. If they don't do well, you're not going to do well.
I think we have a pretty educated electorate out there, and they're looking at each one of us individually. And the Secretary of State's office has more contact with the public than any other state department. And they'll be looking at, are we providing services better and faster? Are we doing a good job protecting them as far as consumer fraud issues? What are we doing to try to make the office more efficient? And I feel confident that we've looked at all these areas, and we've had business roundtable. We also have committees that are helping us from people in the private sector, from citizens, and we've put them into motion, and we've actually got it done. And I think that's what they'll vote on.
Let's go ahead. Let's hit on some of the issues that your office has faced. Are you troubled that you're seeing that we as a state are seeing so much spending by these outside groups that don't have to disclose their donors?
Well, of course, I believe in full disclosure, and I would like to see that, and I think that's something that we all need to continue to work on. But I was very pleased that we have been able to get a lot more disclosure in Michigan in the last few years, including electronic reporting now at 5,000 as opposed to 20,000, and we will require reporting during our off-year elections, that we've expanded our election electronic system to locals. We're running two pilots right now with Kalamazoo and Macomb County and hope to expand that throughout the state. And also, of course, I want disclosure on robocalls. I want to know who's calling so I can tell them to stop.
You had to feel a little undercut, though, when the Republicans last year passed that bill that allowed these independent PACs to spend money on campaign ads without revealing where their money was coming from.
Well, I didn't get everything I wanted, but there's a lot of good changes.
Do you feel like that you were being worked against or that you were undercut in any way during that debate?
I do believe that there was a difference of opinion, and the legislature made laws that made sure that what these new changes have gone into effect, but not everything that I wanted.
That isn't unusual for Secretary of States, is it?
I don't think so.
We happened to be on the off the record with Tim Skubic, and we were talking to Saul Anousis about this idea of changing the way Michigan divvies up its electoral college votes from its current winner-take-all system to maybe dividing it up by congressional districts or doing some type of proportional configuration. Do you have any preference on how the state should allocate its electoral college votes for president?
Well, I haven't looked at anything in writing yet on that. I'm always open to look at any kind of ideas that they have, but that would have to come from the legislature, not our office.
That's nothing you're willing to take the lead on.
That's nothing. We're here to implement the rules and the laws that are in place, and if somebody would like to ask my input, I'll be happy to give that, but that really is the legislature's bailiwick.
If they were to ask for your input, what kind of advice would you give them, and what would you like to see in something like that?
I haven't seen anything in writing, so I really can't respond to that other than it would have to be fair for everyone.
Here's something. The Department of Justice apparently came in to oversee the elections in Detroit this past year for the mayoral elections. Have you heard anything about what they may have found?
I know that there were a lot of issues because in four counties, and including Detroit, we had two-page ballots, and of course, on both pages. And one of the things that we saw is one person took almost a half hour to vote. And, of course, we're always trying to find ways to make that better. So we have our Michigan Voter Information Center that people can go on a computer, and we've also partnered with libraries for those that might not have Internet service. And we also have now made it available on cell phones because we have over 5,000 ballot styles in Michigan. We want to make sure people can look at their ballot ahead of time so that they know how they would like to vote before they get into the voting booth. And, of course, that makes things far more efficient. But I can tell you in Detroit, when everything was said and done, as well as every other community in the state, every legitimate vote was counted. And that's the main thing for our job. We do have a committee of clerks that look at everything and make recommendations. For the first time ever, we have post-election audits. We also have over 30,000 precinct workers, and they usually only work once or twice a year, so it's important to have a good tutorial program for them. We've done that by putting it on the Internet and on DVDs for those that might not have Internet service. And I just got back from the UP, and there were plenty of places up there that didn't. But we want a consistent way to train every single precinct worker, and with the new laws that come and go in Michigan, as well as every other state, we want them to be up to date on everything. So training, I think, is the main issue, and we'll continue to make sure that our precinct workers and our clerks have all the information that they need.
Now, did the Department of Justice then give the city of Detroit an all clear?
I don't know if they're all done or not. I suspect they are, because we made sure you have afterwards, you have a two-week layover period where you have a completely different group look at all the votes, make sure that they were all counted, make sure it was done in a way that is compliant with all federal and state laws.
Okay, and so you haven't heard anything since then?
I have not.
There could be a ballot proposal on this coming election to create a constitutionally mandated part-time legislature. You used to serve in the House for three terms. You think that's a good idea?
Before I served in the legislature, during the time I served in, and now, I believe that Michigan should have a part-time legislature.
Okay, and why is that? I mean, you know the job, obviously.
Yes, I think it's better to have people that come fresh right off jobs, whatever they may be. I know when I was the, I think, second class of term limits. And the good news about that is you have people coming off, whether they're truck drivers, nurses, doctors, attorneys, teachers. You had all kinds of people that understand what's going on in Michigan that have, been in jobs that can give us great input that helps us make good decisions. And I think a part-time legislature would encourage that even further, where you have, in essence, citizen representation.
Well, very good. Well, I appreciate your time, Secretary. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Secretary of State Ruth Johnson.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Emily, Craig, and Jacob. By God, we've seen your ears today. This is a major event here at MERS World Headquarters, the new Jacob hairstyle. You tried to prepare us for this Thursday, but I don't think anything could have prepared us for a clean cut.
I wasn't prepared. I don't even know. I don't even recognize myself. I don't know what I'm looking at anymore.
It's shocking, but I like it, though. I got to say, I will say, now that I look at it more, I like it.
I like it, too. I think we should give a shout-out to the barber or hairstylist who's responsible for this.
Yes. Her name is Stephanie.
Nice.
Stephanie?
Oh, yeah, she's very helpful.
Good.
Not Stephanie.
No, Stephanie.
No, Stephanie. I thought there was a TH or something in there.
No, it wasn't that contemporary.
it wasn't like some highfalutin hairstylist here who's charging $80 for that.
No. Well, hopefully with this haircut shout on the podcast, we won't be coming by looking in the windows because today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Emily's going to have to.
Yeah, we don't want that.
I'd get a glimpse of my haircut, I'm afraid.
You'll have to, you'll have to peel that. Maybe they'll just walk in the front door and then turn right. And you're going to look at you that way.
We need some thicker curtains. Listeners, it's not that exciting. Don't worry.
We got to get Craig a new computer first. Then we'll do the curtains after that. Well, until next week, I'm Kyle Mullen. Take care.